But I met one other gal that was organizing for UAW, and I didn't meet any women. I can't recall any women, for the FFL, the IM.
Basically, just the three of you that you recall.
Right, mostly men.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the different unions were paying there. They had paid organizers in there. In fact, the fellow that eventually became the president, he was the president of our union for some years and very, very good. He was in there as an employee of the IM. They were paying him. He's on salary.
Now, did UAW have any paid organizers?
I really don't know.
Huh.
I don't know.
When you went to the meetings, were these other women, would they come to the meetings too?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. There'd be some women there, but mostly men.
Yeah. Did you speak in those early days, before the election, would you speak up at the meetings at all?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Sure, you bet. But see, I didn't have much trouble that way, except, I mean, because I was just for the UAW.
Yeah.
Now, later on, I used to have problems, which, I mean, I have opposition because, you know, if I thought something was wrong, and I was at a point through my investigation that I thought I knew where the error was and who caused it, I'd gotten that membership for and I started asking questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You were a troublemaker.
They called, but you know, what I would try to do, though, I would try first to, I mean, if I couldn't correct it any other way, if I could not correct it any other way, if I thought these people should answer mm-hmm. the membership for what they did, then I would do it that way. You bet. You bet.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, look, if I'm elected, these people elected me to represent them and take care of their business, that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I would rather not, and if I could correct it without going mm-hmm. so far, I would. But, yeah, I sure would. It didn't matter who they were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't matter who they were. I would ask the question right there on the floor.
Betty, before we get into the first stewardship election, at what point would you say in thinking about the post-war period, you really decided that you wanted to stay in this work? You gave up the idea about going back to
yes.
school and all of it.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of at what point that occurred?
Well, I think that I think, you know, I had a couple of months from the time I was laid off and I worked in that little market.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the job offer. I was thinking about then going back, see.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got this job offer to go to Santa Monica and work, and it was good money. It was more money than I still would have made if I had already received my RN, you know, if I was making
mm-hmm.
more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, I think I'll just take it. And I think it's at that point that I decided that I would not go back
mm-hmm.
because I was making good money, and although, my Lord, I had traveled so many miles a day, but, you know, my little girl was growing up, and I thought, well, this is it. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then when I came back, I guess really and truly, I was thinking about that because, see, I could have gone back to school then. I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
I would have had a financial problem, but possibly I could. But when I went to Santa Monica, and then when I came back, on a recall at a lower job offer, that certainly did it right there.
So you obviously were making a choice.
That's exactly right, because I came back at less money.
Mm.
You see? I thought, well, okay, if I get back here now, it will be eventually build up, hopefully. So, and that was, I think that's what I decided.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I ran for steward, you see?
Yeah, actually,
that's
it.
That
seems to tie in it, with,
right.
With,
I decided,
you're going to be here.
Okay, right. As long as I'm going to be here, and if I don't like what they're doing, then the thing for me to do is get in there and do something about it. Yes.
I'm a little bit confused about the seniority provisions when you transfer to Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, when you were laid off, before you were called to Santa Monica?
Job offer to Santa Monica.
Now that is, was that because, how did that happen?
All right. Now when we were laid off from Long Beach, we were then placed on a recall list.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that if there were any jobs available in your classification in the Long Beach plant, you would have to be offered that job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And now, so the company needed skilled help. Well, after the war, a lot of people all scattered, went back to their farms and all of it. Well, they couldn't hire skilled people. They had a hard time on the open market hiring skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did, they sent these jobs from Santa Monica, job offers to Long Beach. And the Long Beach employment people sent these job offers to those people who were on recall, still on recall, mm-hmm. who had been registering to maintain their seniority, you see, to protect it. They knew that we were interested in a job. So that's how we got the job. That's how I got the job offer. So then when I went over to Santa Monica, of course, I didn't have to, but I did. I joined their union over there, and I paid dues to them, their union over there.
But you, because it was, that was an IAM local over there, right?
Correct.
And because it was an IAM, your seniority would not accumulate, even though it would still be Douglas.
My seniority would still accumulate in Long Beach because I was on the recall. And as long as I complied with the provisions or requirements to register every 90 days to be available for that job, then I protected it. Now, if I didn't register every 90 days, then I would lose it. So as long as I was on recall. Now, if I'd have been in Santa Monica, say, for 6 months, you know, and a job came up, an A job, which I was on layoff for, mm-hmm. and if I had turned it down, I would lose everything. I would lose all my seniority. You see?
Mm-hmm. Even though it was at Santa Monica.
Different union. So it didn't matter where I went. In other words, when you're on a recall, that means that if you have an offer for a job, that you will drop whatever and come back, see? So I can still accumulate that. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm saying I'm available, okay? Yeah. I'm available. Right. In the meantime, I'm not drawing unemployment. I'm working, but I'm available. I want to come back if there's a job offer in my classification. Now, when I got the job offer for a B assembler, I didn't have to accept that. You know, I could have turned it down because my recall was for an A job. But there was only a month or two left anyway within that 24 months. I would have lost everything had I not come back. So I thought to protect my job, you know, any future,
right.
and that I would take that lower paying job and get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll at least be in the payroll and I'll be in there so that, and I'll if there's any promotions, they'll still have to promote seniority order, you know. See?
Now, was El Segundo IAM or UAW?
IAM.
IAM.
Mm-hmm.
So that for any of the other Douglas plants, because they were IAM and Long Beach was UAW, your seniority would not get transferred?
No.
I see. Okay.
No.
Now, given how active you were in the UAW, how did you feel about being at Santa Monica in a different union, and what was your relationship to the union while you were at Santa Monica then?
Well, in the first place, I didn't think very much of the union when they could hire me in from Long Beach right off the street. And I was being paid, I think it was 10 cents an hour more than the man that was training me, and he'd been there for, my gosh, for years. I didn't think much of their union.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an excellent mechanic. And I never attended any of their meetings or anything like that. I really didn't. I paid my dues because, you know, I felt that I was benefiting from their bargaining there, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't take part in any activity there.
Mm-hmm. What were your expectations about being able to be recalled before your 24 months were up?
Well, I was very much afraid that I was going to lose it, to be quite honest, because there wasn't any work that came into Long Beach. It was just, you see, that all your military work was just nothing after the war, and the reason that the work that was being done in Santa Monica, I heard, and we were working on the DC-6, the commercial ships. So I was very much afraid I was going to lose everything. I thought I was going to be in Santa Monica for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, so I was very pleased that we got a few contracts, but it's mostly for spare parts for the military ships that were flying.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back to Long Beach, well, this great big building 12 that we worked in, the quarter of a mile building, and that's where the B-17s were assembled, you know, and out. There was just one little section of the building that had lights, and all the rest of it was all boarded up and all in storage and everything, you know, it was just... they had a lot of, they leased out the buildings for some of the government to store some of the equipment and that sort of thing in there. And it was just a very weird, eerie feeling to be in that big old huge hangar, you know. Especially when I worked in that, right in that all during the war. The old B-17 just to come down that line, those huge ships, you know.
While you were waiting for recall, did you have any feeling at all that people with less seniority were getting recalled before you were? Did you ever have that feeling?
No. No, I really didn't. You see, because I guess I was naive. I thought the UAW was super, super. And just because Walter Reuther was super, I expected everybody else to be honest and have integrity. He did. When I come back, in 47, and I found out the hanky-panky was going on, you know, then I became very upset. And had I known when I went to Santa Monica that sort of thing was could happen, I would not have been very comfortable up there. I can tell you that for sure. Really. But I felt my rights were being protected. I have so much confidence in the UAW and the integrity of it and everything else that I was naive.
And but you defined the way in which I play around with seniority more of a political issue than a male-female.
Yes, issue. It was. Mm-hmm. It was a political thing, definitely. It really was. At no time did I ever see any separate list. And I became chairman of that committee, and I really got into it, you know. Then of course I actually got in the bargaining committee too, you know.
That's interesting. Next time I see you, I'll bring you an article that I think you'd be interested in. It's pretty academic, but there's some interesting stuff about the grievances. That this is from Detroit again. That the women began to file once they realized that they knew they'd be laid off, but they figured they'd be recalled on the basis of the seniority. And once they realized they weren't, they began to file grievances then. But again, in a sense, because there was a longer history of the union there was probably more of a chance for that to develop than might have been true here.
I'm sure that's made a great deal of difference. I'm sure.
But again, getting up to the your first stewardship job, what between the end of the war, when you basically in this period decide you're not going to go back to school, but that basically you are going to remain in the shop and get involved in the union. What happens after your divorce in terms of your family and social life during this period? You get divorced right at the end of the war.
Now this is my second marriage. All right. Now I I was divorced. I think it was 47. Between 46, I knew that it wasn't going to work, you know. And it was in 47 when I came back. I was in the process.
But you were separated all that time, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the years. Isn't that awful to remember all that? I'm trying to remember it. I think it was...
While you were working with Canada,
19, that's when
were,
I...
You were separated.
And in the process.
Yeah.
And I think it was in the 47 when I got my divorce. For sure.
Well, during that period of separation, and actually during this period after the war, where after all this kind of pitched hours work, the incredible pressure, after the war, life must lighten up a little bit.
Well, it did. It lightened up. And I had more time for my little girl, which was what I really enjoyed. We were very family-oriented, you know, and I spent a lot of time with my little girl. Now, and as far as social activities, I didn't do very much. I didn't go out very much or anything like that. However, 1947, when I became active in the union, then I began to meet more people who were interested in the union. And my social life, a lot of it became things like we would have our community services committee, we would have basket socials, and we would have square dancing, and we would have different things like that. I think it became very, very union-oriented. In fact, I met the next man that I married. He was the president. He was the president of the union.
Oh, and he's the one who's been the IAM organizer.
He's the one. He's the one.
And when
was
that?
Well, I met him in 47 when I came back. He's the one. He's the one that encouraged me to run for shop steward. And see, he was the chief steward, and he was also in the bargaining committee. He was also the president of the union. So he told me that he would help me, give me all the help I needed. You know, I said, "Gee, I don't know anything about the law, or anything. I have a, you know, I don't want to run for an office that I can't handle." So I met him, and he was a very handsome man, very good-looking fellow. And a very intelligent man, just very intelligent. And he was a real trade unionist, a real trade unionist. I admired him tremendously, and I fell in love with him. And I went with him for quite a while. And finally, I married him. And we were married, I think that about 3 or 4 months after we were married, and he moved into our home, where my father, my little girl, and I were. We were in our home. And about 3 or 4 months after we were married, he was in a meeting one night, and I was gone, and this lady came to the door, knocked at the door, and she said, "I'd like to see Ernie West." And my dad says, "Well, he's at a meeting." And she said, "Well, would you please tell him that his wife called?"
And my
father was very much opposed to marriage anyhow, because, you know, his old Union, his military experience, he figured anybody acting Union was a communist, you know. And so it took a long time for my father to accept Ernie. And Ernie had two boys by a previous marriage, too. So my father thought that Ernie was after me because here my dad and I were buying a house together, and he figured that he was after whatever we had, you know, and he was very much against it. But then finally he got to know Ernie, and, you know, he understood why I liked him and all that sort of thing.
Did
his
sons come to live with you?
They came to stay with us a couple times, but just a visit, you know. And my little girl and little boy, they got along great. They were nice little boys, real nice little boys. Anyway, when I came home that night, my dad told me about it, and he said, "I knew there was something wrong with that guy. No communist, no good, so-and-so." And I said, "Oh, my dad." So when Ernie came home, I said, "What's this all about?" And he said, that's an ex-wife. I said, "Well, that's not the mother of your boys, you know. I met her." He said, "Well, no, it's another one. As you didn't tell me about her." Well, when I finally met her and talked to her, I found out that he was still married to her. He was never really legally divorced. So here I was stuck with the. I had to go through an annulment. I had to go to court. And I had to go through an annulment. And it was really something because, you know, here I am, well known in the plant, and he was well known in the plant. It was so embarrassing. And beside that, I was pregnant. I was pregnant, and you know, when this all came out, and I lost the baby. I was hospitalized, and I had a miscarriage. It was just a real sad, tremendous, terrible thing. And I was so hurt that he didn't confide in me that I kicked him out. Go, you know. And he told me, he kept saying, you know, "Well, I'll get it straightened out. You know, I love you and all that and everything." I said, "Go, you know." And I was still madly in love with the guy. And I really respect him because he's a fantastic trade unionist. Fantastic.
So the whole thing only lasted a short time then.
I went with him for. I'm trying to think of what year. Isn't it awful? I can't pin it down. It's terrible.
Was this an oversight, or did he know he was not?
He knew he was. He knew he was, and I think. I really think that he thought that he could get it straightened out.
Mm.
You know, that he'd get it straightened out, and everything would be all right. But and then too, you see, we were going pretty steady, and he was getting pretty serious, and I said, "No, we're gonna get married." You know. Stuff, you know, so apparently he thought, "Well, I guess I'm going to have to, can't wait any longer," you know what I mean? That sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, it really, I was really hurt, and because I really loved the guy. And it wasn't long after that he went on the international staff.
Because I was going to say, wasn't it difficult once with his being here and you're being so active and being involved in union together?
Well, he went on the staff then.
Oh, very shortly after.
Uh-huh, very shortly after he went on the staff. And they sent him other locals and that sort of thing. And I'd see him occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, he'd come in for a special arbitration case, something like that, but I didn't see him that often.
How did the people in the union, in the shop, react to all of that when it happened?
Well, the gals thought it was not, you know, wasn't very nice what he did.
And the men probably thought it was funny.
Well, some of the men, you know, they're all pretty human. It was a big place. Some of them said, "Baby, I'm sure sorry," you know, those that knew and know that I cared. And there was always some of these people that are just stupid and make fun remarks, and so I just chose to ignore them. I just tried to act like I didn't hear it or didn't even give an answer, or I'd say, "Well, I guess that's life, that's all."
Mm.
And I had to continue, you know.
Yeah.
But it was very difficult for me for the top management people that I dealt with, because I think by that time I had been elected to the bargaining committee, and I was dealing on the top level, you know, and I got to the point where I was arbitrating cases and everything, you know. So that was kind of embarrassing, very embarrassing, and that especially when I lost the baby and all that stuff, and it was just a real hairy thing, you know. And it took me a long time to get over that, and it was just a hard thing.
So when you married him.
But I didn't withdraw from the union. I mean, I didn't resign from my jobs or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured that, okay, tough as it may be, I've got to continue. I've got to keep on, you know. And as long as he was not in the local all the time, I would just hang in there. And everybody, a lot of the people, the top management people, were very nice to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lucky.
By the time this all happened, you married, you'd already moved up. But you'd met him when you, just as you were, became the chief...
shop steward.
Shop steward, then.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that really convinced me that I should run and hold an office, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, at, when you were shop steward then, at that point, when you came back, by the time you were you ran for shop steward, had, you'd moved back up to A again? Or were you still,
no.
You were still B?
No, I was still a B.
And how long?
I was still a B. I can remember. I can remember even when I was a shop steward what I would do. At that time, everybody was looking at how soon you were going to make an A, because it was about 20 or 30 cents an hour difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, here I was a little B still, and I'd go around to each person and introduce myself and say, do you have your A or a B? What's your seniority date? And I'd get their whole history, and I'd write up a little thing on every one of them, you know. And so I was still a B, and I can't remember how long it was before I got my A. But it was in seniority order.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Now, in what other ways did your life change after the war years, up in this period before you went for the stewardship, with this kind of lightening up stuff? You started going out with him and spending time with him.
Mm-hmm.
How about the rest of your life? In what way did it change, given all the pressure of the war and this kind of change that occurs afterwards?
Well, I'll tell you, for one thing, being that the war was over,
mm-hmm.
I felt relieved that my brothers were safe, you know, and that they were going to be able to continue their life, and you know, it wasn't a case of where you get up in the morning and go to work while you knew that, it was so terribly important that you really get your job done and get it out and hurry a bit. So it was a lot easier, more relaxed to work, and you didn't have to worry about that sort of thing, you know, the responsibility of working those long hours, push, and all that sort of thing, and so we could have a little more fun for, like, going to movies and going to the beach, you know, instead of working Saturdays and Sundays and things like that. So it was just great to be able to spend the time with my little girl. It was just great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it because it made up for all those years that I didn't have with her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just wonderful. It was really great. And although when I worked in Santa Monica, you know, I had to get up early in the morning because we had a long ways to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see much of her, you know, at that period of time.
But you weren't working overtime during that.
Some Saturdays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some Saturdays for a while. But at least I had my Sundays,
yeah.
You know, and had a lot more time with her,
mm-hmm.
a lot more weekends. It was great.
That reminds me when you mentioned the reducing of anxiety and concern about your brother.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the VJ, well, first VE Day and then VJ Day in the plant? Can you describe that?
Yes, it was absolutely fantastic. The VJ Day, of course, I was home when that, I think it was at 4 something or in the afternoon or something, I think, when it was announced. And so I wasn't in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
I was out of the day shifter, and I was out of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just fantastic. It was just like a big Mardi Gras, you know. It was just absolutely fantastic. The majority of the people, you know, just absolutely
mm-hmm.
great. Some people were walking around like they just couldn't believe it really happened.
Mm-hmm. You
know, just couldn't believe it. And then there were some of the gals who were anxious to get back to their homes and out-of-state people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were happy about that. You know, they were ready to go because they'd been working very, very hard. And, of course, then people like myself who had members of their family in the service, you know, were crying and so
mm-hmm.
pleased to know that their family was coming back to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was just great,
mm-hmm.
absolutely great. And I know that at the end, though, right at the end, after VJ, and when we had to finally scrap out the ships that were remaining, and we knew they were going to be scrapped, that was a heartbreaker. That was a real heartbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Really was. You get so, we take so much pride in what we were building, and we're so proud that we could put one of those out in every 7 hours, you know, and it really hurt to see them just
mm-hmm.
going out to the boneyard to be crushed.
Yeah.
But all in all, it was, like I say, it was just like a big party.
Did you go to work the next day?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, we went to work the next day because, for one thing, what they were doing, they were then getting ready to lay off. You know, even though we were working on a cost-plus basis, you know,
mm-hmm.
They still were getting ready to lay off, and they were all pretty well organized for it so that when the time did come, it wasn't too bad. You know?
Do you remember how the layoffs occurred? In terms of, in some cases, there were just massive numbers thousands, actually,
right,
laid off at once. How did
right.
that take place? And how did you, what did you think was going to happen with you?
Well, we knew we were going to be laid off. And the thing is that the way it was done, we knew that they would keep some classifications, you know, as long as they could, and it would be done in order.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were thousands of them laid off. Oh my Lord! And I knew because of my seniority that I, you know, about I wouldn't be in like the first or second or third
yeah.
day. I'd be maybe the fourth day or the next week. See, and my Lord, they set up big areas that looked just like corrals, you know. And they had signs up, you know, where people are supposed to drop their toolboxes according to employee badge numbers and all that sort of thing. And people would come in the morning, and I mean thousands of them. And Building 12 is a big building. It's one of the largest buildings out there. And it was just like a big stockyard.
And how, during when thousands were being laid off at once, how would they be notified? How did they manage to notify that many people all at once, basically?
It came out right to the department,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you would be given your notice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you almost pretty well, you know, knew anyhow, according to your
yeah.
length of time you were there, and also according to the way they had the work. Now, like the fabrication people, a lot of them went out fast. But as far as manufacturing, because the company would be getting X number of dollars on certain positions on the line,
mm-hmm.
they would keep those people. They'd be the last ones in that classification
mm-hmm.
to be laid off. See, and that's the way they did it. And that's why I was one of the last ones to be laid off.
Was there, out at Lockheed, the IAM agreement, I noticed, they made a distinction between emergency layoff and, I forgot what the other was called, but the emergency layoff, they would lay off thousands at once without regard to seniority. Then they would check the seniority and recall them within like a week or two.
Oh, well, we have some problems like that. We did have some problems
mm-hmm.
where they got too anxious and then the paperwork wasn't too good and they would have to recall them.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have much of that
mm-hmm.
because it was so, almost 100%, you see, in classifications.
Mm-hmm.
So they did make some errors. They did have to call
yeah.
some people back, but not very many.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
as far as you know, by union contract, there was not this provision for what was called emergency layoffs that disregarded seniority.
No.
Uh-huh.
Mm-mm.
That's interesting, that,
mm-hmm.
that difference.
Mm-hmm. We had a clause in our contract for a temporary layoff. And but that would be like departmental and that sort of thing,
uh-huh.
you know, but nothing about emergency.
So basically mm-hmm. what would happen is a classification would get laid off.
Right. Mm-hmm. And all, see, all. And the thing is, where they would make their error would be maybe say like a B. See, all maybe all the B's, and maybe they just nip into some of the A's, that would have been a clerical error.
I see.